Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well, well, well. We come to another Sunday afternoon, first Sunday in November, and we want to truly thank all of our supporters out there in terms of the 47,256 listeners who have tuned into a show here on Home-Based Business 101, truly making this listener-supported radio. As each time as I come on these airways, I want to again thank my grandson who introduces this show, and we're very happy that he is still live and around and doing what he needs to do to move his life forward. And that leads us into the passage of reading today from Daily Motivations for African American Success, November the 4th. Something that you can use. The value of our lives depends on how we use them. Aaliyah Walker, philanthropist and daughter of Madam C.J. Walker. Here's the reading for today. We all wonder at some point why we were placed on earth and what the purpose of our life is. Of course, there are various views on this subject. The first view holds that we should do everything possible to reach our full potential, that we should strive to be the best that we can be. The second view holds that we live to glorify the Creator or God. The third view believes that we live to serve our fellow man or humans. Jesus of Nazareth, Clara Mother Hale, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King and all are all examples of people who committed their lives to the service of others. An elderly woman recently asked me to retrieve a box of letters from her dresser drawer. As I removed the letters, I saw a beautiful quilt in that drawer. When I asked about the quilt, she told me to take it out and look at it. It was a masterpiece. She told me her grandmother had made the quilt as a wedding gift years ago. When I asked her why she did not have it on her bed, she said, "Oh, it's too beautiful to use." How sad she felt her gift was better hidden in a drawer, preserved than used. Whether you believe your purpose in life is to reach your full potential, to glorify our Creator, or to serve others, it can only be achieved through personal sacrifice, persistent effort, and cooperation with others. You must find something bigger and grander than yourself, a cause stirs your emotions like no other. Our Creator gave humanity a beautiful gift, the most beautiful gift in the world, and I hope yours is something that you will use. Today I will analyze my talents and establish goals and make use of them. And when I was reading that, David, I couldn't help but think about you. As you said, you know, you're a servant of service. And, you know, that we all have something special to do with the time that we've given here on this earth. And that's just so important that we all recognize the gifts and talents that we have and that there'll never be another one of us ever created in the universe because we are special. And I think about that when I think about my own life because several months ago I wasn't feeling all that good and had actually contemplated suicide. And then the thing that got me through that was just thinking about all of the people that would lose out in terms of my family members, people that were around who would probably ask themselves, why did Brother Johnny kill himself? And you know, it's a deep thing when we think about the struggles that we go through as African American men living in America. You know, we are challenged and faced with obstacles at times that seem so far, you know, unsurmountable, and just how do we go about achieving our goals? We just all we really, really want is to be able to just have a better life and achieve the things that we want to do for our family, our offspring, and those people that are important in our lives. And at times, you know, we go through the struggle of how do we find financial achievement living in America. And I thought about several of my friends who had took that journey, but it takes a lot of courage to be able to snuff out your own life. But most of our friends that did that, seven, matter of fact, that, you know, they were faced with some financial challenges, and I never forget one of the ones who had a very vivid memory of his last day on this earth, because I was working in Emerson Village at the time at a Amoco night shift, 11 o'clock to 7 in the morning, and I used to have to walk home from where that was at down to get to my house in Wildwood Parkway. So inevitably I would pass her, you know, I used to hang out a lot at Emerson High School's tennis court, and I'm passing the court that morning, and here's Marty sitting out on the bench at 7:30 in the morning, and he had a fifth of vodka. He was drinking that, and I guess he was doing whatever he needed to do to numb himself for the, you know, he made that decision, and, you know, he didn't, I remember coming past him, and I was kind of tired and sleepy. I knew something was wrong. I told him, you know, hey, brother, you know, I need to go home and take a nap. And after I take my nap, I said, I'll catch up with you, and let's talk later on today when we've had a chance to sober up so that we can see what's bothering you. And what was bothering him was he was looking at being carted off to jail for back child support. So he took his own life on that day, all because he did not have enough money or did not figure out where he was going to get the money from to be able to get caught up on his child support. And by not being able to answer that question or be able to figure out how to resolve that issue, he did the ultimate. He took his own life. And who knows what he could be doing today in terms of where he would be at today. I mean, his family, you know, they were shocked, like most families would be shocked, in terms of someone that seemed to have everything going on. And, you know, I remember his mother asking me, you know, when they knew that I was one of the last people to see him alive, asked me, you know, did he seem okay, or, you know, did it seem like something was really bothering him or whatever. And, you know, it hit me by surprise, and it took me for a big loop, because I had to console his brother, Michael Cruz, and because they were like best friends. They did everything together. I taught both of them how to play tennis. That's why I saw him that morning at the tennis court. And I just thought, you know, that he was having a rough day that morning, never knowing that was going to be the last time that I was going to see Marty alive. And so, you know, I say that to say that, you know, I'm just glad that whatever demons were bothering me a couple months ago, that I chose not to let them win and get the victory and take my own self out, because I can only imagine, you know, the trials, tribulations, and situations that everybody that knows me would have gone through, and asking themselves the unthinkable question: what was bothering Brother Jahi so bad? And what was bothering me at the time was what bothers most African-American men who struggle with survival here in America: how do I find a way to be able to financially be able to take care of myself and my family? And that is usually the biggest question when we look at suicide rates in America, or what causes us to do the unthinkable, the inevitable. So the thing is, again, from going back to the reading, is to make sure that you find a good purpose and something that you can use your life for. And so we want to keep that in mind. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on our co-host for the day, Mr. David Murphy, who's publisher of the National Black Unity News. And, you know, just get some feedback from him around how I opened the show up today.
Okay, great. First and foremost, I want to give honor to God, because it's truly a privilege and an honor just to be here. And, you know, there's different planes in life. You know, God looks at things from the beginning to the end. Sometimes men look at things from the past. Sometimes we fear things of the future. And sometimes we forget about today. But this day, you know, I can look back. Just 1 year ago, I was in a nursing home. Just thanking God for just being here a little longer, because I just went through heart surgery. And I had all kinds of thoughts that went through my mind. I went back over my life. I didn't know if I was going to come through it, because I was looking to the future before the surgery. I didn't know the outcome, what it was going to be. Then I looked at the past. And then I thought, you know, if I leave here, you know, look at all the people that I interacted with, and then again, some I have disappointed, and then some I have lifted up. Some of them I needed to make amends to, and some I just lost track with. But, you know, there's a lot of whys but for, and how come if I should have or I could have, that man go through with his mind. But, Brother Satabi, I was listening to you. And not only was I listening to you, I was hearing you. And thank God, because, you know, we have to make choices on a daily basis. Our lives are made up of choices that we make. And everything has every choice we make has an action and a reaction to it. And some seen and some unseen. And we never really know the full outcome of the choices that we make, the impact that it has made not only on our lives, but our family lives and our greater community lives. But I'm glad that you made, and I'm pleased that you made, the right decision. And brother, I can say this about you. I know you're a humble man. I know you dedicated your life. But I also know the struggles that you have endured. Not all of them, but some of them. And sometimes if we put things on a scale, and you say if you put in a certain amount of things, then the outcome should be just as great. But life is no crystal stair, they say. It's not fair for a man concept of life is. And it seemed like the more you had dedicated, the harder the hardships becomes. And I can identify with that, because I had dedicated my life to a purpose, and but yet I see some people look like they just flourish, and they do wrong to people. They hurt people, and the money just flowing. And they live in the high life, as some of us say it. But I don't know how their conscience is. I don't know if they can sleep at night. I don't know if they enjoy what they enjoy, what they seem to enjoy. But, you know, but all the thing I can count on is counteracted is my own thoughts and my own feelings, my own perception of things. And getting with that thought that you even had to contemplate it. See, a lot of people don't understand, especially the plight of black men. Even our closest, our wives, our children, will never fully understand the burden that we shoulder. You know, especially those of us who are conscious. You know, sometimes we put in the work, and we want so much, not only for our own individual family, but we want so much for our communities. When they don't seem to come to fruition sometimes, we take that guilt personally. Because we put up success. All of us have a level of what we call success, and it's different for each individual. But far as society is concerned, it's based on your income, your lifestyle, and your achievements. And men judge you on that. But the reality of things. See, I've lived for a certain period of time, and now it's finally hit home. Some people may call it wisdom. Because I have many, many times made attempts on my own life back in the day. Because I thought I wasn't worthy. I thought I was a burden on people. And I thought it would be an easy way out, you know, if I just wasn't here. But even in that state of mind that I was in at that particular time, it wasn't fair. It wasn't thought out properly. Because with black men, you know, nobody can beat us hard as we can beat ourselves. And when a man feels though he has not accomplished what he think he should have accomplished, or the things that he could have impacted, we take it personally. You know, a lot of times they say men don't have feelings and men don't do it, but you know, we hurt more than just about anybody. Because God had left dominion to us. And if we feel as though we let down God, then, you know, what is the reason? But let me say this, you know, the best way I can do this is this. And I'm so glad that you came up with this subject matter, because those out there who may be listening to this radio broadcast may be going through some serious stuff. And this, when we fast and approaching the season and many contemplate suicide, many have guilt trips, many fall into depression this time of the year. Thanksgiving, Christmas, and all other holidays packed up into one. And even though it's supposed to be a joyous occasion, but most of the time it's heartbreak because you miss some of our people have passed on, and we miss those folks, and we reminisce, and it takes us into uncharted territory sometimes. But when I was listening to my brother share, because that's what he was doing, he was sharing with the listening audience, and I commend him, because it takes a level of strength to even share something like that. See, that takes a man's man to even admit something like that. And the only reason I can believe that he would say something like that, because he just wanted to let you know that there's always hope, no matter how dark it seems to be. There's always hope, and we have to allow ourselves to at least go through it. But let me say this. I would listen to Brother Satabe. He spoke on many fronts. He was talking about your gifts, your talents. He was talking about the plight of black men. He was talking about deep personal things that even make you want to even contemplate suicide. You know, and I mentioned to you earlier that I had contemplated that, you know, when I was, you know, back in the day. But if anybody's on this list, I want to take you on a journey. And I was compelled to say this when I heard my brother speak. And I don't know what the result's going to be of me sharing this with you. But I go where I'm led, and I'm led to share this with you. And I may have spoken about this on this airways in the past, but I think it's appropriate, even more appropriate right now. About a year ago, I'm not even sure it was that long ago, I read this book, and this was a self-help book. I forgot the name of it, but in any case, it had this little thing this gentleman went through, and he had this mentor of his to help him out in a certain situation, and the mentor told him to take this test, a personal test, and he called it the 7 levels of why. And when I read over it, and I took the test. I said, I'm going to take this test. And he suggested that you do it with a friend or a close confidant or somebody you can trust. But he forewarned people that this thing was going to get heavy. It was going to get deep. So if you're going to get somebody to share this test with you, they better be real close and that can hold some of your secrets in it, because the thing it will get heavy. And so I'm forewarning you. Take the test. It's a good reason to take it. But I suggest that you take it personally. You do it by yourself. And most of you may, or you, if you don't, you do. I'm the publisher of the National Black Unity News. And prior to that, I used to publish a newspaper called The Informer. And when I took this test, I was doing the National Black Unity News. So it had to be less than a year ago. And the first thing I asked myself, why am I, and this is a test that I'm talking about, the 7 levels of why. My first level was, why was I doing this newspaper? And normally when most people take these tests, you know, the first thing come to mind is just general answers. Like mine's well, because I want to help people. I want to help black people. And then the second level of why, I asked myself, why do I want to help people? And then I said, you know, well, my people's going through struggle. We've been through slavery. We've been through this and this, that, and this, that, and this, that. And I felt compelled to do something about it. Then why, I asked myself on the third, why do I feel compelled to do something about the situation that black people go through? And then it started getting kind of heavy. I even forgot the levels of whys that I was on, because it started taking me on a journey. It took me on a deep journey. And I'm going to forward you again, because he's going to take you on such an emotional roller coaster. I was laughing one moment and crying like a baby the next moment, because I uncovered some things that altered my entire life. Little small things may not be significant to other men, but it was great. It changed and altered my life. Those little choices or perceptions that I perceived that impacted my life. And it got kind of heavy, you know, and I asked myself, you know, why I wanted to help people. And then it kind of took me back to my father. And my father came from a place called Whiteville, North Carolina. He moved here in Maryland. He came from Whiteville, North Carolina, and moved to Baltimore sometimes in the 1940s. And he came here with 2.5 years of college. And he was extremely talented. He was a singing group. He could build things. He was a farmer. He could do a lot of things. And but when he came to town, he met my mother, and then they started having children, which I was one of them. And he ended up, you know, at that time, when I'm going back to, he had about 4 or 5 children. And my father, you know, he was when I first kind of, you know, knew who my father was, He was a kind of a joyous man. You know, he was a man of accomplishments, because we lived in a very nice community. I mean, it was almost like utopia, when I remembered. And then all of a sudden, I watched my father start changing. I started even start seeing him and my mother having arguments and stuff. And they were just like the perfect couple when I said, I was just in the world of utopia. A young little boy, I was 4 or 5 years old. And my father began to drink a lot. And I watched him disintegrate right in front of my eyes, from that Superman that I thought he was. And then I seen him drunk and hurt. And I overheard him one time in conversation with some of his drinking buddies. And that kind of, you know, that impacted my life, because it hurt me, because I saw my own father. And so from that point on, I had this thing, I wanted to help people, because I really wanted to help my father. And then when I got to my fourth or fifth level of my whys, it took me all the way back when I was 4 or 5 years old. I remember the first day my mother took me to school. And she took me to the little school up there right with Coppin State College at North and Warwick. It was a little steps there. It was a little school building there. It was a little house there. It was only for kindergarten and first graders. That's all they had in that school, a little house school. And my mother left me there and with all of these strange children and these few teachers. And so she proceeded back across North Avenue and went back down on Warwick. We lived from, you know, North Avenue and Baker Street. You know, that's how it was, two blocks of Warwick in between there. And we lived down on the Baker Street side. And but that was upscale community at the time. That was top-notch back in the day in the 50s. And but before my mother got home, I came out of that school. I walked across North Avenue, which endangered my life because, like it is today, it's still a busy street. It was a major thoroughfare for cars and buses and stuff. And I put my life in danger 4 or 5 years old going back across North Avenue. I went home. And my mother asked me, she said, "What are you doing back here?" She was extremely upset because, first of all, I guess she figured I could have got hurt or got hit by a car or something. But she told me, "Well, you're going back to school." And that was the first time I can recall that would defy my mother. And, of course, when I did that, you know, I was adamant about not going back. And she was determined I was going back. She won, but at the same time, she had to whip me. That's how determined I was, you know, I wasn't going back to that place. But she won. She took me back there anyway, and I suffered it and through them days. You know, and a couple of weeks later, and I couldn't snap put on. I never did like school. Just couldn't stand it for some reason. That was one of the reasons. But another thing happened. See, back in my day, you know, we didn't have black radio stations. Every once in a while you may hear Nat King Cole or Lord Price song may come up in the 50s. You know, every once in a while these stations would play some black music. But they didn't have black stations. You all 24/7, and so most of the people had to listen to Elvis Presley, the Dean Martins, and all of those type of people, Patti Pages, and those type of songs. But I loved music as a child. I used to just listen by the radio and just love it. And I used to imagine. I loved music so much. I used to imagine myself being a singer. I used to think I was the greatest singer in the world. I could sing any type of song. Man, woman, child, any song, I could sing it in my mind as a child thinking. So, you know, I had that dream. I wanted to be a singer. And so one day we had this little thing in this school, going back to the school. There was, they had nap time. You used to lay your head down on the desk and you would take a 10, 15 minute nap or something. And for some reason, and I don't know why I did it, but I just broke out in a song. And I start singing "Don't Be Cruel" by Elvis Presley. And my teacher jumped up, and I sang it out loud too. And she told me to shut up. And then all the little children that was in my class started laughing at me. And then, you know, from that moment on, that was another life-altering moment for me. Not only did I didn't like school, now my dream was killed because those children laughed at me. I became an introvert. Not only would I not speak in class again, but I was shy around people from that point on in fear of people going to laugh at me. I was scared to take chances. And I thought about that. And I said, even to my these several levels of wise, getting back to that, that's probably why I do a newspaper today, because this is another way for me to express myself. There could have been many outlets I could have chosen. As far as media is concerned, to help my people, why did I choose newsprint? Because it was another way for me to express myself because I was more of an introvert. And so some of these deep levels that I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is going to take you there. And so, from that point on, I would never sing out in public unless I had a drink in me or something. I would get on the corner with them fellas that it would take a lot of drink for me even to do that with them. But that killed the dream of mine. And then on this sixth level of why, I had this little thing, you know, back in my day, we used to, on Saturdays, we said, you know, black in the 50s, children watched cartoons, those who had televisions. And cartoons and the funny papers was big time in comic books. So, you know, those things were big time back in the day. And they had this character named Mighty Mouse, you know, comic books too. And but he was also a very popular cartoon character at the time. Mighty Mouse was, as far as I was concerned, he was my hero because not only was he strong, but he could fly and everything like that. But but he would also beat up cats, a whole bunch of them at one time. I mean, he would just beat them up, tie their tails together, and toss them. He would, you know, he was bad. And then at the end of the show, he would always get the little girl mouse, pretty little girl mouse they used to show, and he would fly off into the sunset with them. And I said, yeah, I want to be him. You know, I said, yeah, you know, and that was my favorite cartoon. And I said, I'm Mighty Mouse, you know, in my mind. And then on my seventh level of why, I asked myself, why in the world would I want it to be a mouse? And then it really dawned on, and there was another life-altering moment. See, back in them days, them same time period, they had the Mickey Mouse Club. And in this Mickey Mouse Club, now you get the coordination, the mouse, well, Mighty Mouse, Mickey Mouse. So, you know, so that's how the minds work sometimes. And they had this little boy on there. He was a young, it was a bunch of, I think about 14 or 15 teenage children. I think the ages from around 4 to 16 or something like that. But the two youngest ones was a little girl and the little boy. The youngest boy's name was Cubby. And the youngest little girl, I think her name was Sharon or Karen or something. I mean, I forgot her name. But in any case, Cubby, I had a brother younger than me. And when the Mickey Mouse Club come on and they would shout out their names, and I would say, I'm Cubby. He would say, I know I'm Cubby. Me and my brother, little brother, would actually fight over being this little white boy. And because, you know how children's doing about cars. That's my car. But that's what we used to do about these, you know, TV characters. But in any case, then it really, ladies and gentlemen, I took you on a little road trip with me, just kind of slightly. But the reason was, I asked myself, why did I want to be a little white boy? And then my whole world dawned and came down on me. Because the main reason when I discovered that why I wanted to be a little white boy, because I didn't see positive black people in the media, on television, on radio, in the newspaper, nothing. So I idolized myself being somebody else other than myself. In other words, that's why black people, through media, through propaganda. And I took this, I'm getting a little heavy here, but you know, it dawned on me, my whole life seemed to be predestined to do this newsprint to set my people free, because I still had a dream. I still had that Mighty Mouse attitude about saving my people. I still, somewhat of an introvert, because I speak through the media. But, you know, I've overcame, now that I discovered some of the things that held me back, I'm set free of them now. And if you take this test, it would take you through a lot of reasons, the ups and downs, the ins and outs. But then you also would discover some of the things you overcame and then some of the things that held you back. And in my case, my whole life, my ups and my downs, was set way back in them days, back in them school days, when I didn't see myself in the media, when somebody told me to shut up, when somebody forced me to go to school. All of those things had an impact on my life. And I dedicated my whole life because of those impactful moments to do what I do today. Here I am, still fighting for my people. Even though I used to do that as a dream, as a child, through a cartoon character. I saw my own problem when there was no black media. I started one. When I see my father hurt, I see my brothers, my black men hurt, I'm dealing with all types of black men groups and stuff like that because I understand what they go through. Years later, I had a talk with my father. He cried on my shoulders, and I cried on his. I asked him, why did he leave us at when I was 11 years old? He told me he left us a long time ago, way before then. He told me when he came to town how he had big dreams and aspirations. He told me that he loved us and that he wanted so much to do for us. But he also told me that when he got on these jobs, he was prepared to do this and prepared to do that. They had him cleaning out toilets. 2.5 years. He was like, that was like a doctorate degree, ladies and gentlemen, back in his day. But yet they had him cleaning out toilets, calling him boy, giving him pennies on the dollars. And he had to come home and take care of his children. And the disappointment that he suffered, he said he just couldn't take it no more. So he ended up drinking. And so, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm saying to you, society has a great impact on us. The way we look at ourselves, the way we judge ourselves. Media has a powerful thing on there because it dictates you what's in and what's out, what's good and what's bad. And we kind of perceive what they predict to us. This is in, this is success, this is not, this is beautiful and this is ugly. White is good, black is terrible. White women are beautiful, black women are ugly. You know, all kinds, you know, and we perceive those type of things. And you wonder why a black man goes through the changes that he goes through. Because on a daily basis, a black man is beaten down, not only by the larger society, but he has to come home and hear from his own, those who are closest to him. He had to look into their face, and sometimes he sees that disappointment. But they don't see, oftentimes, the struggle that this brothers have to go through, the obstacles that have been set in our way. I was at a meeting last night, and they were talking about we were doing much better in doing integration, and we were doing this and doing that. Of course we was, because we were forced to do with each other. But at the same time, there are people right now to this day are plotting our demise right now. They're plotting it. Because every time we take one level, they take 10 levels to keep us in our place. See, there are things hidden, things that is happening to us as a people. The same thing happened to my father. It's still happening right now today. This is why programs like this is extremely important. This is why when you see a brother crying out, because this is what we're doing, we are crying out. Like John the Baptist, crying out into the wilderness to set our people free. The Moses syndrome, Marcus Garvey syndrome. Because we have been made aware of our gifts and talents. You see, ladies and gentlemen, what Brother Satavi spoke about earlier, those gifts and those talents, man, see, he touched a real heavy subject. Because all of those things he spoke about, I experienced them so much deeply in person than most, more so than the most average man would do. Because I've been charged with it. I've been convicted by these things. I set it as my life course. And I spent many years in this thing. I could have looked out for David Murphy. So could Brother Satavi. He could have just went up there and got a job somewhere, and we could have lived happily ever after. No, but we've been handed a burden for our people, a burden for our families. And those of us, the true brothers and sisters, I'm going to tell you this, and most people will not believe this, but the true soldiers are on the battlefield on a daily basis. We got the wounded scars to even prove that we've been on the battle. Look at our finances. Look at our lifestyle. Look at our health. We carry a large lot on our shoulders that people would never see and probably never would understand. Because they said the law of the land is self-survival. No, but we have an extra burden. We have an extra burden for you, brothers and sisters. It's not only just about us. It's about all of us. And so when you see a brother like Brother Satavi, David Murphy, and a lot of other brothers out there who's trying to make a difference, who are making a difference, you need to support us. Because when you support us, you're supporting yourselves. And see, you don't know, like I say, sometimes, man, you know, my roof is falling in right now. I'll be honest, my roof, now I could go out here and make money, but after everything I do, I put it back so that you can have a better life. Surely I can take care of me, but I can't let it go. I can't let you go. Because I'm committed to you. But see, like I say, a lot of people will never ever understand this. Because you don't have to go through it. But and then when things go wrong, when things don't come to fruition, when you fought a good fight and still like it seemed like you still haven't won or you're not even winning, you take it personally sometimes. What, did I do something wrong? But maybe I'm not good enough. You know, we ask ourselves these questions. And if you put 10, 20, 30, 40 years into something and still you're still struggling financially, and you say, what have I done this for? Well, let me say this to you, Brother Satawi, and to all of these true soldiers out there. You know, I said we live on two planes, or we live on a godly plane and we live on an earthly plane. Man judges us one way and God judges us another way. See, God put these things on our hearts. God called us out. They say many are called, but few are chosen. Those who have suffered the way are chosen ones. And if you go through, I'm going to give you an example. If you don't take my word for it, go through the Bible, the Quran, and see those people that God has chosen to do his will for them. Look at the struggle, the Jobs, the Moses. Look at what they had to go through serving God, serving their people. Look at the chastisement. Look at the stuff they lost. Some of them lost everything. Everything. Put in jail, slandered, lied upon, everything. This is what we go through. And you wonder why we get weary sometimes. But nevertheless, we march on with our last ounce of courage. Not just to feed and take care of ourselves, but try to take care of you. And sometimes, oftentimes, most of the time, we don't even give no recognition. Everybody else be on stage getting highlights on Broadway, lights are shining and gifts are given and donations are here and there, and then brothers ain't doing nothing but putting on a show. But them true soldiers out there, they get shunned, cast aside because they don't play the games other people play because they real. They serve God. There ain't no games with God. Ain't no shucking and jiving with God. So I'm saying to you again, brother touched a heavy spot on me on this subject matter right now, and I feel my brother because I understand him. And that's why we locked up right now, because we understand the struggle, because we are the struggle. But my people, I'm going to tell you something. If you lose brothers like myself, Brother Satav, and a lot of other brothers out there, remember I say your life have impact, one way or the other, positive or negative. You take brothers out like us, and you listen to some of these negative brothers, man, you think you're doing bad now, you think the stuff that you get in that, it can be 100 times worse. But I'm going to say this to my brother, because I have him here right in my presence right now, Brother Satawi.
Yes, sir.
Now, I understand, you know, sometimes we have these thoughts and things and stuff like this, but from my perspective, you are a giant of a man. You're one of the strongest brothers I know because you are a true soldier, and I witness it. See, I had the opportunity. Some people I know about, but this brother I've known for years. And I know the struggle this brother through, but I know the dedication that he's been through, that he put forth. And the most people that hurt him is his own people. The people that he truly tried to help. And that's the hurting part about it, ladies and gentlemen. See, y'all don't understand that. Who hurts us the most, the ones closest, the one we've been in over back before, the one that kind of put the daggers in our backs, and we have to not only fight the larger communities, but we also have to come home and get it too. We have to sit in, like we was in a breakfast yesterday, brother saying they doing this and doing that. Oh, I got this and I got that. Some of them just little puppies. You say it like that, but you know, like we said, also still got milk behind their ears and wet behind their ears and stuff. You know, talking about they this and they that. And I just look at them sometimes. And see, you know, unless you walk into another man's shoes, sometimes you don't know the work that he's done, so that you can stand up and say you this and say you that. Because we have made an impact. Brother Satawi and his wife had touched so many children and adults all these years, had impact in their lives, made a big difference in them. I see life was made of a series of choices. And Brother Satawi and his wife, they put in positive choices for people to make, gave them an option. And so I'm saying to you, I'm going to just take this time to appeal to you. You need to support David Murphy and the National Black Unity News. You need to support Brother Jaheed and the endeavors that he's doing with the Vortex, the travel, and everything else that he's involved with, taxes, whatever you need, that season coming upon us. You know, you need to work with this brother, because the more you work with him, he's going to turn it around and sow more seeds into you. That's what we do. That's what we've done. Ain't what you talk. This is what we have always done. We'd be satisfied with a good place to lay our head and a decent meal every once in a while. We don't need no yachts and all of that kind of glamorous stuff, because we know how in the world can I enjoy them kind of things and you out there suffering. Brother Tyler, I better get back to you because I'm about to go there. So back to you, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir. Okay, the exercise you're talking about is called the 7-Level Deep Exercise, and it's in the book Millionaire Success Habits by Dean Graziosi. And it goes like this. It says, the question he asked himself is, one was, why did I write this book? Then the next question he had was, why do I want to change a million lives? Then the next one he had was, why does it feel amazing to serve and help others? And the fourth one, why is it important for you to have a business based off principle and values? Next was, why is it important for you to leave a legacy for your family? Why do you never want to go backwards? And the seventh one was, why is it important for your children and your family to have choices that you never had? And I think you touched on, you know, several of those different things as you went through your life in terms of explaining, you know, how you internalize that that lesson. And what people can do is if they go to www.thebetterlife.com and go to the resource tab, they can download the 7-Level Deep Exercise and then look at how to apply that to their own life. And the thing is, it's just so important. And what usually helps me get through those dark moments is what I think about, again, as you shared when you first ran across this exercise. And I remember, you know, discussing it as, you know, I look at it and, you know, that's why I was able to keep the book on my nightstand and immediately was able to pick up the book, having access to it so I could share, you know, what you was talking about in terms of a snapshot of the exercise and, you know, how people could look that exercise up and begin to use it as a roadmap to why do I do what I do. And so that's just so important. I'm glad that you took the time to go through how that exercise affects you in terms of your life, being able to share with our listening audience so that, you know, they can see how it can affect their lives. And again, with me giving them the resource link, which is www.thebetterlife.com. And then when you go there, he has a Better Life Challenge you can sign up for. And then once you sign up for that, that challenge is free. I'm into day 26 of that Better Life Challenge, my second time around taking it. And, you know, it helps you focus on pinpointing each day challenges and some things that you want to be able to accomplish for that day and also for each week. And, you know, we do go through a lot of times, you know. Every one step I take forward, there's two steps that try to knock me back. And so, you know, we have to go. You know, it's always come out swinging and taking no prisoners, because life is a challenge. And if you get through it, which I'm struggling every day still to make sure that I'm able to get through my life, come out on the other side, and have, you know, and have a life that has a tremendous impact, and being able to share with others. And most importantly right now, besides my wife, the other person that I really want to be able to share a lot with is my grandson, who I will be meeting with next Sunday. So we won't be doing a show next Sunday. I'll be meeting with my grandson, so I'm just giving this audience a heads up. Know that that's a very important aspect of what I want to be able to accomplish next week. I already got it mapped out, written out, things that me and him want to go over, and just being able to share with him, because, you know, it's important that that he has some choices that I never had. Being able to see the importance of him picking up the mantle and carrying it to a whole another level of accomplishments. So we're going to have a very, very serious discussion and dialogue next week. Only day right now that he is free, you know, on Sundays. So, you know, I know I won't be able to do a show next Sunday. So that's, you know, where I'm at with that. But the most important thing is making sure that we share with our children and our families, you know, what it is that we be going, what it is that we be going through, and the challenges that we face, and the things that push us to want to do more and have more. And, you know, sometimes, like you said, you know, the very people that you're trying to do more for, you know, they say little subtle things to you and stuff at times that if they only knew that you care about
them.
If
they only knew. But see, let me say this. You know, I know we don't have too much time left. But, you know, another thing, what I discovered was this. When I took not only my test, but when I took my personal inventory, I'm talking about my life work, my life, the things that I've been through, I sleep good at night. My conscience is clear because I know for a fact that I have not sold out. I worked diligently for my people. I could have done much more, but I know my heart is pure, and my motives, intentions is to help, not to harm, not to hurt anyone. And if I, right now, to this moment right now, if I could help somebody, I will. You know, and so, you know, that's, you know, and I thank God for those attributes because, you know, when you have that peace that passes all understanding, when you know that you have a purpose in life and that your life was not in vain, no matter what, how man judge you or judge the outcome of the works that you've done, but you know and God knows. See, that's the most important fact. God knows. And see, you and I may never know personally or even see the rewards. It's not because that's not what we was in it for, rewards or glory or nothing like that. We did it because we want to help people, our people. And we continue to do so. We haven't fainted. We haven't ran. We stood tall. We stood in the battle in spite of all the stuff that we go through. And that takes courage. That takes commitment. And if I have never done nothing else in my life, one thing I can say, I had a purpose and I tried to fulfill it. And I know my life was not in vain. And I thank God for that. Because I've known brothers. I had sat down and drank with brothers, cried on my shoulders. Some of these older, I used to hang around with older people, and they told me how they regretted their life. They said, man, I had dreams, I had aspirations, but I never acted upon them. I never took a chance. I wanted to do this. I had gifts, and they never acted on them. But God knows I did. I tried. I put forth effort. And I can't never say I regret what I did. No, because I did it because I knew what my purpose, I knew what my calling was. And that's an honor and a privilege to be a servant. And when you say a servant, that's what it's all about, being a servant. And God carries us from day to day. Because every time we get up in the morning, brother, we have a purpose in life. We get up hitting the ground with a purpose. And that's an honor and a privilege to be serving God and to be serving our fellow man. Back to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It definitely is an honor. It definitely is a privilege. And, you know, I just want to thank people that tuned in to today's show. And I hope they got something out of us opening up and sharing our lives with them today as we, you know, just wanted to touch somebody. Hopefully somebody heard what we had to say today, something touched somebody's heart, maybe stop somebody from else who was going through whatever it is that they're going through, that they contemplated their own meaning, their own life. And again, if you go to www.thebetterlife.com, click the resource tab once you sign up for the challenge, which is free, 30-day challenge. You will see the 7 levels deep exercise, and you know he shares in the book. You can also get a free copy of his book, Millionaire Success Habits, and the book is very, very deep. He goes through a lot in this book, but there's those 7 questions. He asks himself, why did he write this book? Next, he asks, why did he want to change a million lives? Why does it feel amazing to serve and help others? Why is it important for you to have a business based off principle and values? Why is it important for you to leave a legacy for your family? Why do you never want to go backwards? Why is it important for your children and your family to have choices that you never had? And I'm going to be going through this exercise with my grandson next week, to help him stay focused and look at some of the things that hopefully he wants to accomplish in his lifetime and how to continue to carry the torch and the mantle and move our family forward generations to come. Well, that's it.
All right, so
we're going to close out today's show, all right?
All right, sir.
All right, we're going to close out with a theme song called It's My Time. And, hey, it's my time, it's our time, it's your time. So listen to the words and apply them to your life. Ashe, amen.
Amen. Take care.
Up to what I want. let's go get ready to fight.